Hey everybody, this is Sean Early, and in today's episode, we're talking to Tony Bevilacqua from Cognitive 3D. We're going to be talking about spatial analytics for immersive technology platforms. So with that said, I'll see you in the episode.
T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, liftoff.
Welcome to the new Robot Spaceship Podcast, covering innovative news, trends, emerging technology, and how it affects the economy, business, and culture. If you like this podcast, don't forget to click the subscribe button in order to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. Hey everybody, this is Sean from the new Robot Spaceship Magazine, and today I'm joined by Tony Bevilacqua from Cognitive 3D. They're a spatial analytics platform for enterprise AR, VR, XR training applications. And Tony has some great insight on just the sort of the spatial analytics aspect of immersive tech, which is kind of a mystery to me. I mean, I know what it is, but I'm not so cued in depth. I've experienced a little bit of it before, but Tony, before we get going, let's just tell me about your company, a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sean. So my background, I'm a second time founder. I ran a company prior to this in the mobile analytics space. And we focused on, you know, collecting data from mobile-based applications, primarily games, at this prior startup. And, you know, through that experience, I got some early exposure to what was going on in the immersive technology space. Specifically, I think it was around GDC 2015. Is kind of when I decided to pull the trigger and make the jump. And really what I kind of realized is I was building a product that was very similar to what was already on the market from a large, you know, slew of, you know, mobile analytics providers that were building out different types of platforms. And, you know, with the immersive technology, I really realized there was an opportunity to create something new and build an innovative product in that particular category. So I really kind of built a thesis around this concept of using the virtual reality device as a vehicle for data collection. So the ability to collect behavioral data, information around, you know, the user's intent, their behavior within a particular simulation, and helping surface that for developers.
And so how many companies are there that do this type of thing exactly? I'm not familiar with the space, obviously. So
yeah, there's not a lot. I mean, yeah. We've had competitors over the years, but you know, I think one thing that separates Cognitive 3D from, you know, some of the other folks that are in this space is that we really went about trying to build the difficult problems in the early innings of all of this. Mm-hmm. So the company was founded in 2015. We took our first product to market 2016. And, you know, I think I had a bit of a you know, improper kind of view on what I needed to build back then. You know, I was working with the team. We were thinking about kind of building a mobile analytics-centric product. Back then, we were talking about like Samsung Gear VR and some of these, you know, mobile-driven VR devices. So it didn't really seem all that different. But once we started kind of peeling away the onion around what do we need to do to demonstrate what's happening inside the headset, and how can we help the developer improve their visibility in terms of what's happening inside the content, that really kind of led the way for us to create our flagship product. And so we ended up taking the entire team up to Whistler, British Columbia. We rented a house there and we did a hackathon. And so during that hackathon, we kind of went in with this lens that we needed to be able to understand what was going on inside the headset. So we ended up creating a product called Scene Explorer. And so Scene Explorer is what's called an after action review. And so after action reviews have been around for a really long time. It really kind of started in the Department of Defense and then kind of moved into the aerospace industry. And it's this idea that we want to be able to understand intricate human performance outcomes as it applies to a simulation. Well, after action reviews can also give us a really good view into what's happening inside of an enclosed device like a VR headset, and it can also empower a lot of other visualizations, insights, and outcomes as well. And so we created Scene Explorer. It was definitely the difficult path. Like, it wasn't what our competitors were doing or anybody else. I think everybody else stayed in the mobile path and they're trying to create a mobile analytics tool for VR. And so we created the 3D based visualizations. Right. We needed to create pipeline. We had to create visualization tools. We had to create new paradigms for collecting data. And so we spent really from like 2016 all the way through into the pandemic, really focused just on core R&D, building out all the underlying technology we needed to make this stuff work.
Right. And just for people who aren't so familiar with this now, you're basically kind of your platform, and you have sort of a plugin. So when people develop their whether it's a game or whether it's a training sim or something like that, I guess I looked, you're in the Unity asset store. So it's basically anybody who's developing immersive, you know, experiences within like a game engine, they could basically just sort of use your plugin, plug it in, and then it taps into your platform. Correct.
Exactly. Yeah. So we offer what's called a software development kit, or SDK.
Right.
And that allows you to integrate that into any Unity or Unreal based application. And so we don't require our customers. Obviously, we don't build content. We're just mm-hmm. building the analytics platform.
Right.
So our customer, who might be the content developer, might also be the end customer, implements that SDK within their application, which allows us to collect the data that we need to make our dashboards come to life. We are a Unity VSP, which is a verified solution provider, which means that we're tried, tested, and quality assured by Unity.
Right. Now, give me a little bit of insight on sort of, I'm kind of curious of the sort of the history of the types of data that you can track. Like in the beginning with like the first VR headsets, we didn't have any kind of, there's like eye tracking like is coming out now. I mean, how did that progress exactly?
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's a lot of good insights that could be gleaned without necessarily having a whole bunch of sensors. You know, the launch of 3DoF-based headsets, even those, we were able to collect much more intricate data around intent and behavior within a particular simulation. 6DoF really opened things up in terms of room scale VR, the ability to move around, the ability to interact in larger spaces. And so we collect behavioral data around things like, you know, the head position and pose, mm-hmm. rotation, articulation, all those types of elements. And you can use, you know, the head position rotation to do, you know, kind of a gaze, you know, within the scene as well.
Right, right.
Which gives you just kind of general idea of like, you know, maybe what the user, what drew their attention, you know, that sort of thing as well.
Right.
Beyond that, you've got hand controllers and other inputs that are also important to understand in terms of getting a holistic view of like what's going on in the simulation.
Right. Now, just give me a couple examples. I mean, some of it's pretty obvious, but for people again who aren't that familiar with it, give me some basic examples of use cases that this is the ideal scenario for.
Yeah, for sure. So we work in four areas. You know, it's a pretty broad, you know, kind of surface area, but we really don't care what you're building. We just give you the capabilities to measure it. Use cases that we see. I'll dive into the details of each in just a second. Training and simulation, huge category for us in terms of understanding and measuring human performance. Consumer research, so this is building digital twins, testing different types of behaviors within those digital twins, and coming up with insights around how users might interact with real space or products. Academic research, so we have a huge number of universities and colleges that use our platform to lead their VR research around the different types of simulations that they want to run. And finally, the kind of the area we're cracking into now is the consumer-facing applications, which, you know, was my original intent back in 2015, but we quickly shifted over into the enterprise space because that's where we could win. In terms of like specific use cases, though, you know, on the training and simulation side, we see a lot of different types of use cases. There's the basics, which, you know, you're really trying to understand UX and UI and how comfortable a particular type of experience is. But beyond that, you also have the ability to test user performance, you know, competency, the ability to retain knowledge. So there's a lot of opportunities to use different types of inputs to measure that holistic behavior as a user moves through a simulation. And you can even use things like gaze or even eye tracking to measure things like situational awareness.
Right. Just to throw you a curveball here, give me an example of a situation that you've used your analytics for that would surprise you, like something that made you went, wow, I didn't realize that was that was the case.
I mean, honestly, I kind of get surprised every single day with the types of use cases that our customers are implementing on. Mm-hmm. I think that the way I look at this space, you know, in a mobile application, it's a very predictable workflow. Mm-hmm. Users click through the various different screens. It's a very predictable type of outcome. Unity and Unreal are like 3D engines. You can create alternate worlds, right?
Right.
And so the funny thing about that is that you got full creative chaos in terms of like what the developer can do in authoring their own reality. And so that reality sometimes comes to fruition in our visualization tools and you know, what our customers produce. So I wouldn't say, I can't really say like, you know, a specific customer use case, but the surface area of what people can create in 3D based, you know, authoring tools is out of this world.
Yeah, I'm continually amazed by, I mean, I think we kind of have the flat touch screen click kind of UX sort of down, at least to a set of standards, you know, but when it comes to 3D, even though it's been around a while, I still feel like it's kind of the Wild West in terms of just the random that shows up sometimes with just interactions and how you want to engage in something, but you don't. I can imagine there's so much opportunity there just to learn what not to do, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. That actually kind of leads into another point. I mean, one of the things that we've kind of discovered from our customers is that quality in these applications is absolutely paramount.
Right.
You know, we've heard from, you know, a large number of OEMs that poor quality experiences, you know, in a mobile sense, you just delete the app from your phone and you move on.
Right.
And so if you produce a poor quality experience in an immersive application, it's a good chance the user might put the headset back in the box and you're exposed to platform-based attrition.
Right.
So you could lose that user forever or at least for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, the stakes are really high on producing high quality applications and making sure that developers are creating things that people want to use and that are not going to make a user really uncomfortable. A good example would be folks have been kind of, you know, frustrated by the concept of App Lab, you know, that Meta has. And, you know, I think that this is, you know, a very purposeful, intentful, you know, proving ground for these applications because I think companies like Meta are recognizing that poor quality applications can ruin the experience and promotion to the App Store is actually material, not just for the developer, but also for the platform.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, that's a really good point, obviously, is, you know, especially with the still to be proven sort of sales numbers for any kind of headset. I think, you know, it would be probably, of course, in the best interest of the headset manufacturers to have much more insurance on these types of things. And I can see how platforms like yours would be a lot more important than people would first assume, obviously, because, you know, I mean, just the nausea factor in general, you know, is so big that, you know, not to mention, you know, once you actually get into an experience and you are trying to do something, it seems like it's a long path just to get to that point to where you're actually tracking useful analytics. You know, it's kind of like the standards sometimes aren't even there to get to that point, you know, much less getting to the point where you actually start to track usable data. But, I mean, have you, I'm kind of thinking as I go here, but in your experience, is it sort of that front end load is a lot of the sort of the bottleneck of what the stuff that your app is embedded in? Do you spend a lot more time in your analytics with that kind of stuff? Or do you feel like we've kind of bridged that gap and now we're at a point now where people are actually tracking more useful interaction kind of things? Does that make sense?
I think that the challenge here is that there's really no standards around being able to understand what makes quality.
Right.
And so if you're a developer, maybe even just, you know, a single person working in a garage, you can release something to the public. And so I think that the challenge that platforms have, as well as, you know, just the developers themselves, they need to meet a high bar in terms of creating a quality and comfortable, you know, type of experience. And so you talked about, you know, kind of this concept of nausea, for example. And I think that, you know, a lot of the early days around on nausea were definitely related to frame rate and other types of uncomfortable UX and UI behaviors that we were putting users in. And so one of the things that we've been working on is, you know, how do we make a barometer to be able to understand, like, how does my app fare in the ecosystem, you know, and how do I compare to other applications from, you know, metrics around quality?
Right.
And so, you know, there's definitely a lot of opportunity and you know, to measure spatial data and human performance inside the headset and, you know, make a better application. But there's also just the baseline, right? Like, what makes a comfortable experience and how do we measure that? And how do we give you indication on, did you create comfortable experiences or not? What draws users into an immersive environment and creates a level of presence? What is our baseline for things like application performance and making sure that we maintain, you know, a high level of performance and, you know, low level of battery burn on, you know, an all-in-one headset. So I think that there's, you know, it's one of the things that we've been working on with our dashboard 3 is these concepts of barometers that you can simply install the SDK and you'll get an indication of where you stand. And so these scores are really around not just things like frame drops and, you know, low FPS or other things that can definitely cause uncomfortable behaviors, but also starting to get into ergonomics, posture, you know, uncomfortable pose, things that we've, you know, started to learn over the last 5 years of kind of working in this space, things that will draw users into an uncomfortable situation and that developers should avoid. And so by being able to understand that as a developer, you can get really advanced insights that you might not necessarily have kind of pulling the SDK right out of the box and getting started with it, that, hey, you know, what you created looks really cool, but hey, you need to do some optimization around things that involve quality.
Right. So speaking of data, in this kind of scenario, obviously the new Apple headset was just announced and they have some pretty serious sort of eye tracking capability. How much have you worked previously with eye tracking in these types of apps? I don't know how many apps, I don't know how much hardware out there actually does eye tracking.
So eye tracking has been around for a while. It's been around for many, many years, probably well before I entered the space. We've been supporting it from day one. Eye tracking is typically something that's interesting when you're trying to understand human performance. So trying to understand, you know, precision in, you know, training, simulation, those types of environments where situational awareness is like super important. So being able to understand, like, you know, in a cabin depressurization scenario for a pilot or, you know, a police officer, you know, shows up on a scene, their ability to comprehend all the different risks and different factors before they make a decision in terms of what they need to do. Eye tracking can be really helpful for those types of use cases from an analytics perspective, but these are enterprise use cases as opposed to consumer facing use cases, where we're not talking about like ingesting eye tracking data.
Exactly.
There are other eye trackers on the market outside of Apple. And a good example would be the Meta Quest Pro. And the Meta Quest Pro does have eye tracking built into it. But, you know, these are not things that are readily accessible to developers. And there's a lot of rules, restrictions, and policy wrapped around how that eye tracking can be used.
Right. I guess that was my question. I mean, it's obviously been around, but I mean, how prevalent is that in sort of the consumer level and the amount of data that, you know, a developer can get from that?
Yeah.
It kind of opens up a sort of a new can of worms, obviously, when it comes to just data and privacy in general. Maybe can you give me a little bit of your thoughts on how that's been handled in the past and how we anticipate that happening in the future with these types of new devices?
Yeah, I mean, it's privacy is definitely being kind of the Wild West in terms of, you know, trusting that developers are not going to do things that are, you know, not so good. I think that, you know, as much flack as companies like Meta get, they actually have probably the strongest developer data use policy in the entire space.
Right.
So when we start thinking about like eye tracking, there's always this concern around, well, they're going to use our eye tracking data for ads or other types of behavioral data collection or those types of elements. And the reality is that these types of uses has been restricted from day one, and that these are not things that are typical within the market. And, you know, we've had companies like Meta and then followed by Apple saying that this eye tracking data needs to be used in a really responsible way. And I think that that's the right choice and the right path. In terms of privacy, you know, there's definitely a lot of different kind of elements of this. At Kognitiv, we have something called the XR Privacy Framework. And so this is really, the purpose of it is we didn't see the platforms doing a lot in terms of providing the ability to restrict data collection. We also saw in the mobile space this concept where, you know, a lot of folks talked about this idea of do not track, and wanted to create a standard around being able to opt out of data collection from an application and set a do not track flag that other systems, other tools would respect. And so because no standard was ever created, the mobile analytics providers and others just kind of decided to ignore it. Because there's no standard, we're not going to respect it. On the Kognitiv side, we decided to create a standard. So we created something called the XR Privacy Framework. It allows you to effectively limit the channels of data that you want to expose to an analytics platform like Kognitiv 3D. We've decided on five, and I'm going to read them here real quick. Hardware data, so this is just basic specifications on what your headset is. Spatial data, so how you move around the application, you know, what behaviors you might take. Location-based data, which could be just as basic as geo data, but could get as precision as something like geospatial data. Biometrics, so any additional biometrics that go on top of the headset, and then social data, so any type of social interactions you have in the experience. And the idea as a consumer is that I would have an opportunity to say, you know, this developer is collecting these types of informations for the following purpose. Would you like to opt in or opt out? And, you know, companies like Kognitiv 3D would respect those flags. And so that's kind of the concept that we came up with. You know, it is a open source library. It's available on GitHub. And it is something that we've built into our SDKs, which means that if somebody did implement the library within their application and somebody set a do not track using the XRPF, that we would turn off data collection in those particular cases.
Right.
So that's kind of been our approach to answers to the Wild West problem, you know, in terms of like there's not, you know, a lot of rules or restrictions or even policy around these things. But there is a lot of other really interesting groups, including the XRSI, that work on things like privacy, child safety, and other types of inputs as well.
Right. Might be kind of doing this is backtracking or just kind of going off on a tangent here, but you got me thinking a little bit about specifically eye tracking when it comes to like mixed reality situations where, I mean, obviously if you have an environment where it's sort of already predicted and things happen where it's already in control, then it's a little different data set. But how do you handle, or how does your platform handle data that sort of appears on random? You know what I mean? Like if I'm just
that's a great question. So what you're saying is basically VR is super predictable.
Right.
That's easier to record.
Right.
Less privacy implications over here.
Right.
We go over to AR and MR. I'm in somebody's living room. I'm in somebody's bedroom. Right. I'm out on the street. I'm in somebody's backyard. Right.
Exactly.
So there's obviously huge implications in those particular areas. So on the Kognitiv side, the way that we go about this is that we don't collect any camera data at all.
Okay.
So we're not trying to collect the contextual environment that you're in.
Yeah.
But what we do is give you indication of what Unity can see, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, or whatever the engine can see. So if I have augmentation in my field of view, I can still track the relative position of the headset and the user relative to the stimuli that has been exposed by the application.
Right.
And I can measure the engagement with that stimuli. I don't necessarily get all the contextual information about what that space looked like and how they might have behaved. Now, in terms of like our roadmap and where we could go in the future, you know, it makes me think about, you know, potentially white boxing the environment. What are the things that are not privacy invasive that we could do? You know, maybe I could show a white cube for an obstruction, you know, like here's a chair, here's a table, there's a wall over there. So basic plane detection, you know, things like that, just to give the developers some indication. Again, we're trying to help them build better content, build better quality. You know, having no visibility, not so good, but having really good visibility, not so good for the end user. So what's the happy medium of being able to understand what was the contextual environment that this application was running?
I'm just thinking, I don't know how far in the future we are, but you know, in your ideal scenario where we have a standard pair of glasses, we're walking down the street and maybe an app is being used to project either a 3D element on a certain type of thing or a just a standard video or an ad on a particular chosen sign or something. I guess that's sort of the random that sort of fascinates me. And maybe I'm just kind of talking in my brain here a little bit, but I think the ability to track that must be really challenging, but also really fascinating because, you know, if a guy's walking down the street and, you know, he's looking at a McDonald's ad and you can predict that he's looking at a McDonald's ad and you could, as a competition, put a Burger King ad on it or something like that. You know, I see the random to me is there's it's kind of the sky's the limit unless the AI can sort of determine what you're actually
also makes the assumption that either the platform is enabling that type of behavior, or the customer, the end user in the headset, has made a decision to open an app that replaces ads.
Exactly.
Right. So I think that, you know, there's kind of a hellscape out there where, you know, the platforms, you know, go down an evil path and, you know, do things in your field of view that, you know, or, you know, something that like what you described in terms of like replacing ads or augmenting your world. I just don't think that this is an acceptable reality for end users. And so, you know, while these concepts can be highly toxic and definitely fall in the category of hellscape, I don't think that those patterns would be well accepted by end users. So, you know, I don't think anybody's opening up the ad replacement app, you know, when they walk down the street. Making apps highly contextual, though, I think is a problem that's yet to be solved yet. Like when I walk into the airport, it would be great if my boarding pass came up and it gave me some wayfinding. You know, and it would be great if it did that automatically. But the ad replacement piece, you know, not so interesting to me personally.
I'm just thinking in terms of the where people could go with the evil, you know,
data,
you know, and the ability to be able to try to track any kind of scenario like that with so many randoms of just walking down the street must be challenging.
But let's go the other path though, right? Let's go in the alternate direction. What if somebody could create an app that creates ad block for the real world? Right. So they could actually block billboards and ads you know, you know, replace ads with kittens, you know, like those types of things.
Or just show me how to get to my flight. That would be awesome.
There you go. I would love that.
Well, cool, man. Anything else you want to add before we jump off?
No, I think those are the biggest pieces. You know, so Cognitive 3D is a freemium product. We are in the analytics business. We're not selling anybody's data or anything like that. So we do offer the product for free. We want you to subscribe to a plan one day. You know, that's our business model. We're not in the business of selling data. If you're a developer and you're interested in building higher quality experiences, if you're interested in understanding things around comfort, ergonomics, pose, those types of areas, you can go to cognitive3d.com and get started with our platform for free. We'd love to have you on board.
Very cool. So once again, this is Tony Bevilacqua. Sorry, I got that right.
Oh, good. Bevilacqua, you got it.
From Cognitive 3D. And this is the New Robot Spaceship Podcast. As always, I encourage you to subscribe and follow us on all the podcast channels. We're also on social media. We've been around for a while. Just so listeners are also aware, this used to be the ARVR Magazine Podcast. It is now the Robot Spaceship Podcast. Same great content, much cooler logo. Tony, thanks a lot for being on, man.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
If you like this podcast, don't forget to click the subscribe button in order to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. This podcast has been brought to you by the Robot Spaceship Podcast Network. For more information and other great podcast series, go to robotspaceship.com and subscribe.